Okay. Okay, we're about to embark upon a very, very long sugya, which is actually, we're going to break down to five different sugyas. So really the next five sugyas that we're going to be on are all going to be revolving and beginning really to discuss almost one line, one short brisa that the Gemara quotes. What's strange about the sugya is that this is not a Bava Basra sugya per se. It kind of got snuck into the base of Bava Basra a little bit through the back door. But some of the yesodas that we're going to discuss are going to become critical sugyas, both relating to Bava Basra, particularly some of the second parak sugya is going to come to life now at this point. So we'll do a little bit of the second parak before we do the first parak. A lot of end of Bava Kama sugya is going to come back. Some beginning of Bava Kama sugya is going to come back. So this is going to really be a Pesach for a whole array of different real heavy-duty Nezikin kinds of sugyas, but it almost got into Bava Basra a little bit through the side. How did we get there, and what are we talking about, what the sugya is all about? So we take a look at the first of the Marmakomos. The Gemara is just commenting on the very beginning, the first phrase of the Sechta. Remember from when we first started, the Mishnah had started off with, Shutfin Shiratzu Lasos Mechitza. If you have two partners, they are sharing a chotzer, they're sharing a courtyard, and they decided they wanted to make a mechitza between them. So the Mishnah then went on to delineate, how do you go about doing that? Who pays for what, and what building materials do you use, and where is the wall situated, and then what happens when the wall falls down. And that got us down the tangent of what do you do when you have sphakas and mamma. But back to the Mishnah itself, the Mishnah said that the shutfa that want to make a mechitza, they build a wall. So already Chazal are sensitive to that phrase, what does the word mechitza mean? Because actually the word mechitza really has two different meanings in halacha. Mechitza could be synonymous with a wall. So then the Mishnah would be telling us that if the partners wanted to build a wall, this is how they build it. Well, the word mechitza may mean something totally different. The word mechitza may mean lachlok, to divide up. Mechitza may just simply mean partners that want to divide up a courtyard are required to build a wall. That's a big, big difference between the two. According to the first interpretation, the only thing that obligates them to build the wall is their agreement to do so. And if they didn't choose to build a wall, they didn't obligate themselves, they weren't mechayim themselves to build a wall, then they're not obligated to do so. And simply dividing up a courtyard is not a mechayim of building a wall. That would subscribe to a view that hopefully we'll talk about much later on, called Hezek Re'i Alav Shmei Hezek. The fact that I have a claim against you and I say, you're looking into my property, I don't like sharing a courtyard with you, I feel a little bit embarrassed that you're looking at what I'm doing. That is not a claim in halacha. Hezek Re'i Alav Shmei Hezek. So according to the first way of reading the Mishnah, the only time there's a chiyuv to build the wall is if they were mechayev themselves, if they personally obligated themselves to do so. According to the second way of reading the Mishnah, once they decide to divide the courtyard, the halacha superimposes a chiyuv upon them to build the wall, because Hezek Re'i is Shmei Hezek. It's considered to be a damage, and it's considered to be a legitimate claim. I don't want to have to share a courtyard. I don't want you to see me in private. So that's a loaded question. Hopefully, the Shem will get to the base, but the Hezek Re'i is a problem or not. But the Mishnah presents as a possible viable pshat, represents as a viable pshat in the Mishnah, that what does the word mechitza mean? So the first time I've come says, Savrua, that the Talmidim in the Yeshiva thought, my mechitza, what's taicha the word mechitza? Guda, it means literally a wall. That would mean in the Mishnah, Shutfin Shiratsu, to build a wall. Here's how they do it. And then the Gemara says, and let's bring a proof from other sources in Tanokim, that the word mechitza actually does mean a literal wall. Kiddusai, and we learned the following brisa. And because the Gemara quotes this brisa, and because this brisa is so loaded and touches on so many aspects of halacha, this is now going to become our sugya. The sugya is going to be known as Mechitzas HaKeren Shenifritza. And again, five different parts of the sugya as weeks unfold. But the sugya begins now with the brisa that's simply being quoted to tell me taichin the word mechitza. That's the whole purpose why I got the Masna Beis. Say, Baruch Hashem, I made there because it gives us something to talk about. So, kid aside, here comes the Braisa. Mechitza sakerem shenifritza. There was a wall in a vineyard that has a breach here. Why is there a wall in the vineyard in the first place? So the answer is that there's a kerem here, but next to the kerem, immediately adjacent to the kerem, is a sod, there's a field of tefua. There's grain growing in that field. So there's wheat, barley, whatever else, and we'll talk about that a little bit later on, what exactly is growing in that field. So let's say for a simple case, I own a vineyard and you own a field of wheat. So how do we do that? How can we have wheat and barley and grapes growing so close to one another? Isn't that a problem of kilayim? The Torah says, lo sizcha charmcho kilayim. You cannot have chinta and anovim growing so close to one another. So you have to do one of two things. Either you have to separate them, you have to have a significant distance between the two, or you can do the Mishnah saying kilayim, you can put up a wall. If you put up a wall between the two, then everything is okay. Then everything's fine. How does that work? What kind of magic is that? We all know you can put up a wall 100 feet tall, but the roots are still underground. There's still an awful lot of kilayim there. So Tosfos says, no, that's not called kilayim. Because the word kilayim means erebuvia, means a mixture, means when it's nikolayim. You walk into the field and you see gaval, there are vines on top of tevua, gafrela. This is kilayim, this is ma'ur of yachad. What's going on beneath the surface doesn't bother us. Says, that's not called mikolayim as kilayim, and therefore that's not called kilayim. It's interesting that the word for kilayim, the targum unculus, the word kilayim, is the word eruvim. That's what it says in Parashas Kedoshim. It says the word Erevin. Soncha was Sizra Kelayim, so it uses a lashon of Erevin. Erevin is Me'ura, means to be mixed together. I say this is a good trivia question. A question you can ask at the Shabbos table. What Pasuk in Chumash has a Masechta mentioned three times in the Pasuk? And in the Targum of that Pasuk also has a Masechta, different Masechta mentioned three times. The answer is, and the Targum says that each one of those words kilayim says the word erevin. So just in case you're interested in that piece of tidbit of trivia. So comes the Bryce and says, if I have a bekerem and you have tzvua, and the mechitza is everything's great, everything's wonderful, until the mechitza falls down, until the mechitza gets a breach. Mechitza kem shenifritza. So the Bryce continues, Omer lo gedor, we say to the party, who is the party we're speaking to the Baal HaKerem, and we'll find that hopefully as weeks go on, why we're talking only to him and why is about Tfuah not concerned. We say to the Baal HaKerem, Omer lo gedor, you better fix that piritzah right away, because if you don't, so then there's going to be some Yisurim taking place here. And what happens? He fixes it. Chazra v'nifritzah, and then it breaks again. Obviously, he was about as qualified as I am to fix the fence, and it fell down a second time. We say to him again, you better fix it. After a while, he said, nah, I'm not thinking, what's the difference? Offense, not offense, come on. So two things happen now when he takes that attitude. I raise a kidesh. So first of all, the produce that's growing now in such close proximity to Isser now becomes Osir because of Kiliyak Arab. Now, Kiliyak Kerem is a big problem because not only is it also to do Kiliyak Kerem, it is one of those very few kinds of Kilayim, actually the only kind of Kilayim that if you do it, it actually becomes also even B'dievet. So now you can no longer eat the grapes. The other fellow can no longer eat his grain. They're also B'achila, also B'hano'ah, has to be burnt. Pentikta Shemlea Zer Shetizra. So we have a very, very serious consequences on our hands. This was all because the fellow didn't fix up the fence. So I raised a kiddush. So he created an instant kiddush kerem. But now comes the nezikin. Up to now, this was kelayim. This was roim. Now comes the nezikin part of the sugya. It becomes the beginning of asking mechayev achriyuso. Not only did he create an iser of kiddush kerem, but now the baal kerem, because of his negligence, has to reimburse the baal hatvua, the owner of the wheat, for all the loss that he suffered. This guy had planted a whole wheat field worth $10,000. Now it's worth it. He's got to take all the wheat and uproot it and burn it, throw it all down. It's terrible. He caused a tremendous hefsid mamon. He is chaya for the nezek that was now incurred. So two things happen when the Baal HaKerem does not listen to us and refuses to fix the fence for the 15th time. It becomes osur be'achil bano and harayz chayav be'achrayus. Oh, I'm not repeating. I didn't say why. I'm telling you the facts. The facts are, the Braitza says, it's everything is incumbent upon the Baal HaKerem. Why the Baal HaTfuah gets off scot-free? So we're going to have to push that off till about the fourth of the five sugyas. Okay, so that is a loaded, loaded question as to what happened to the Baal HaTfuah. So we're going to, it's going to take us way, way far, for no pun intended, far field on that one. So let's backpedal just to the din right now. I want to know, forget about what the Baal HaTfuah is, but I want to know, why is the Baal HaKerem chayev? I understand why we ask him very nicely to fix up the fence. And I understand why he's in violation of a din of Issa v'Heter, of Yeradei, of Tzidkei HaKerem, by not fixing the fence. But I don't understand why it's chayev to pay. Why in the world is he obligated to pay for this? This is so indirect. I understand the parish of Adar Mazik. The Torah says in Parashat Emor, Maka nefesh behema yishalmena. If I go ahead and I shoot your animal, kill your animal, I'm chayev to pay. Kosher has hefsid mamon. I understand it's not just animals. I understand if I take a hammer and I smash the window of your car, I have to pay for the window. That I get. Other than mazik, I understand. This is a mazik. This is so indirect. What did I do? I'm sitting in my house. The basis knocks on my door and says, you better fix your fence. And if you don't fix your fence, it's going to become Kiryat Karim. And if it becomes Kiryat Karim, the other guy's going to suffer a loss of money. So 15,000 steps down the way, why am I chayav for that? At first glance, that smacks of what we call in halacha grama benezikin potter. It is so indirect. Why am I potter altogether? So in order to understand that, we have to move on to a sugya in Bava Kama to define properly, when do we call something other mamazik? And when do we say something is too indirect in order to be potter? So comes the Gemara Bava Kama that Tzari Chesem and Alf, and the second Gemara Mekavos, the Omar Rabba. I go ahead and I burn an IOU that you have. Somebody owes you $10,000. You have a document, a shtar, that says that Reuben owes you $10,000. I go ahead and I take that shtar and I burn it. So now the question becomes, you take me to a din Torah. You just caused me a hefsed mamon of $10,000. And I say to you, actually, the hefsed mamon that I caused you was the value of a piece of paper. We just went to Staples to figure out how much that was. That's about 2 cents. I'll be more than happy to shell out the 2 cents for you. The guy screamed, what do you mean? But because of what you did, I can no longer collect the debt. Because now the lawyer is saying, I'll jump in the lake. So I don't need the money anymore. Go prove it. So the mamon, the one who I burnt the shtar, is saying, you caused me that I can no longer collect my $10,000 debt. So the quote-unquote mazik says correctly, right? You said the right word. It's because I caused indirectly. I burnt the shtar, chagadya. I burnt the shtar, which now enables you no longer, disables you to be able to collect your debt. And you're going to be down. It's true. That's 15 steps down the line. You're going to be down $10,000. But that is only grama. And grama ben Ezekin potter. Now the Gemara says quickly in the second verse of Basra, don't think that grama ben Ezekin is mutter. Don't think this is a nice thing to do. Don't think that there's a trip to Gan Eden walking around burning people's shtaros. You're not allowed to do that. But we're not interested right now whether you did a nice thing or not a nice thing. You know, this is not Musa Seder right now. This is halacha. This is chashmah. We're sitting in a Beis Din Shomata, not a Beis. Beis Shomala has their own chashmah. Beis Din Shomata, we want to know chayev a potter. So the answer is mazik be a dying chayev, grum be a zikin potter. So comes Rabban and says, shtoresh shtoresh shachavarish potter, the amalei niyar kalaymanach. Because the Soreif, the quote-unquote Mazik, supposed Mazik, can say, I burned a piece of paper. I'll pay for a piece of paper, no more than that. So comes the Gemara, the third of the Mamakomus, and tells us that notwithstanding what Rabba said, that Soreif Shtar Shechaver is Potter, we don't necessarily paskin that way. It was actually a Machlekes HaTanoim, whether what Rabba said was correct or not. So comes the Gemara, the third of the Mamakomus, and tells us, Omra Meimar, Man Dedoin Dina Degarmi, Amemar says that this category of burning someone's shtar is a new category in halacha. We never heard of this yet. It's called dina de garmi. Now, we're probably scratching at the garmi. That sounds awfully close to the word grubba. So you got to hold off sugya number three till we answer that question. So we got a lot of work to do with this sugya. If you want to just get an idea as to just how long the sugya, this whole series of sugyas takes us, in yeshiva, we started the sugya of Mechitza Kevish and Nifritza right before Yom Kippur. that we had a 2 week break. That's true. But we started during the series of Tshuva. We are in the fifth of the sugyas now. We're just about ready to be Messiah, about a day or two in Yeshiva. So it's already been 2+ weeks since the Zman started already. So it took us about 3 weeks at Yeshiva. That's 5 shiurim a week and a clip of 1 hour and 15 minutes a shiur. So again, we will do things in a little bit of a, we'll pick up the, hit the gas a little bit here. We'll talk about every single nuance of the sugya. But it is a fairly complicated 5-part series of sugyas. So comes the Gemara and tells us that a new concept, a concept called Dina de Garmi. I damage you in a way that's not quite grammar. It's not absolutely and totally completely indirect. On the other hand, it's not taking a sledgehammer and smashing your car. It is somewhere in the middle. There are degrees of how direct it was. And I don't want to say anything that sounds foolish from a legal vantage point. I know that even in American law, there are degrees to say a marshal in murder is, am I correct, this first degree, second degree, third degree, there are degrees in how much I set up a situation that eventually caused somebody else to die, or Reuven Kilship and literally Yadayim. So there are degrees. So too, there are degrees in Mazik. So there's Mazik Yadayim, that's for sure, Chayiv. There's Grama, very indirect, that's for sure, Potter. And then there's gray area called Dina de Garmi. Now again, we have a long way to go to define precisely what, how would you know whether you're a Grama or whether you're Dina de Garmi? But it comes a member and identifies Sorish Tosha Chavero as being that middle category. And a member reports to us that's actually Machlekes Atanoim, whether we make you Chayev for Dina de Garmi or not. That's what a member said. Man did doin Dina de Garmi, the Tanoim, whose opinion is that you're Chayev for Dina de Garmi, Mahu made Vishtrami Alia. They will make you pay the full amount of what it says in the Shtar, i.e., the full $10,000. A tremendous factor. It's a tremendous. It's Mar Machum number 5. Right? Not even Shia number 1, but Mar Machum number 5. Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Uman the low doin Dina de Garmi, whereas the Tanoim who don't make you chai for Dina de Garmi, Magmid Ben Nurbi Ali, they will make you pay the 2 cents the value in staples of the paper. So Rabba is 100% right, according to some Tanoim. How do we pass Gil Halacha? So the Gemara continues. Hava Uvda, once it happened, such a case happened, the Kafye Rafram L'Rav Ashi, the Avdeki Kishur L'Salma. Rafram was a famous Dayan in the days of Rav Ashi. Rafram made Rav Ashi pay. Kishur L'Salma is a phrase for saying the full amount. Wait, what just happened in the Gemara? Rafram made Rav Ashi burn somebody's shtar. Rav Ashi wrote the Gemara. Rav Ashi was walking around burning people. What in the world do those words mean? So it's actually a fascinating machlekes that we've shown him. Just taich, what do the words mean? So Rashi has a very, very interesting shot in the Gemara. Rashi says, it was Rav Ashi who burned somebody's shtar. You know when? When he was a kid. She says, Kshay Koton, it was a prank. In case you think your students are doing funny things. He was Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi wrote, Rashi had a lot. He had a lot of, you know, a lot of kids. Sometimes the wildest kids turn out to be the big reshivas. You never know. So Rav Ashi burnt his friend's shtar when he was a kid. And Rav from the Dayan made him pay the full amount of money. So it's a fascinating shot because the chayr is not correct. When a child damages something, he's potter. There is no concept in halacha that the father has to pay. If my kid breaks somebody's window, I don't have to pay. Go take my kid to a din tori. You can't take my kid to a din tori. He's under bar mitzvah. So tough luck. You're not going to get reimbursed. So it's a very, very difficult shot in Rashi. Why did Rav from actually make him pay the money? If he was over by mitzvah with Rav Ashi as a 16-year-old going around the burning people's shores, he should be sitting and getting ready to write Gemaras. If he's under the age of by mitzvah, so then why is he chayav to pay? It's a little bit of a strange thing. We had, I can't say it was a din Torah, but had years ago my younger son. So he was playing, tossing around the baseball in the front yard. And I said to him, maybe you should move a little bit, maybe move to the side. He says, a little bit too close to the cars. So he said, no, Abba, don't worry. I'm nowhere near the car. Until smash, and he broke one of the windows of the car. So so he says to me, Abba, don't worry about it. It's not your car anyway. It's only a leased car. So you don't have to worry about it. So when Steve Levy comes back to the show, we'll tell him that it doesn't exactly work that way in leased cars. So at that point, I took myself to a din Torah to pay myself for the broken window. Other Rishonim say that when they say a kafre raf Ravashi, it doesn't mean that Ravashi was the one who broke it. Ravashi was a dayan on the case. And Ravashi's opinion was that you don't have to pay for din d'gamei. And Rafram corrected him and told him, no, you better make that guy who burns up in Ishtar pay the full amount. So again, nuances of what happened. But the simple flow of the Gemara is that we do follow din d'gamei. We follow those views that say you would have to pay for the burnt shtar. And in fact, the Gemara continues along those lines. And the fourth of the Ramakamos, and the Gemara actually identifies who the Tana was. Which Tana said that din d'gamei is chayav. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Meir, he did doin din d'gamei. The Gemara says, my love, Rabbi Meir, lo tefillin kavasei. Is it Rabbi Meir and we don't follow him? No. I'm like, no, Rabbi Meir was tefillin kavasei. The Gemara actually paskins like Rabbi Meir. So even though usually Rabbi Meir Rabbanan, we rarely follow Rabbi Meir. Remember, it's Das Yochid, but here the later Amoraim were Bachriya, Rabbi Meir was actually Mahaloch on this one, and therefore it's the Nimna Vagamu, the conclusion of the Gemara of Vakam, and Ches, and Kuf is, we Lahalocha Paskin Dinah D'Garmi. So everything we're going to say from here on in is going to be assuming that Dinah D'Garmi is in fact Chayav. What does Dinah D'Garmi have to do with the Mechitza Kemshi difference? So comes the Gemara on the end of the fourth of the Ramakamos, that's trying to identify where Rabbi Meir said Dinah D'Garmi is Chayev. So we take the bold letters at the bottom of the fourth of the Rambam Kamos. Allaha Rabbi Meir, the sign of Mechitz Keshiv, it's all of Gedor, Niftov, Gedor, Niftov, Chayev, Achri. So this Braitza is actually Rabbi Meir speaking. And therefore, the entire Sugi Mechitz Keshiv, Niftov, is an expression of the idea that Dinah D'Garmi is Chayev. So in response to our original question, why Mechayev? I'm being in my house. The basin is knocking on the door, telling me to build a fence. I tell him, I'm jumping on the land. I built the fence right 3 times. It fell down. Not my problem anymore. The basin says, no, you better build it. And if you don't build it, you're going to be chayef to pay the money. Why am I chayef? Based on what? It's grama. Says the Gemara, no, it's not. It's not grama. This falls into the cracks of what's called Dina de Garbi. And that is the reason why I chayef. Again, we have a lot of questions. We don't really know what the difference between grum and Dina de Garbi is. If I saw a case, I'm not sure whether I could define it properly. Don't feel bad. Taisus, the Rosh Ramban, also had trouble defining what exactly the difference between grum and Garbi is. So hopefully we'll talk about that as we go on. But one thing is crystal clear, that the chiyuv that appears in Baba Basra, the Beis HaMinalach, the Braisa of Mechitza Kenshi Nefritza, Hareza Kishra Chai Bechir Yusso, the magic words Chai Bechir Yusso, is only true because Dina D'Garmi is true. So comes the Ramban in the fifth of the Ramban Kamos, and now gets the Sugi rolling. Up to that was just the introduction, to just familiarize ourselves with why Yechaya, but now the Ramban really, really gets the Sugi started. The Ramban, as hopefully we'll see Mitzvah Shem over the next couple of days and weeks, wrote Ramban does not need my approval, but a phenomenal, fascinating sefer almost, called Kuntres Dina D'Garmi. Dina D'Garmi was so complicated that the Ramban decided, instead of just writing a couple of chidushim here and there on it, he wrote an entire treatise, an entire book called Kuntres Dina D'Garmi. It is printed in many of the editions of the Chedushi Ramban and say the Nezikin, so they printed as a separate independent Kuntres, it's a good 30 pages long, for Kuntres Dina D'Garmi. So we are going to make reference to this Kuntres Dina D'Garmi time and time again. It is the primary Torah source about the Sugyos of Garmi. So comes the Ramban in Kuntres Dina D'Garmi, and he poses the following question. Fifth of Ramakam, Su Ikal Medag, Heich Nisha Minan Mehaim As Nisa, Dainina Dina D'Garmi. How did the Gemara know in Baba Kama Davkuf, the Mechitza Kerem is an example of Dina D'Garmi? This was the Gemara's statement. Harav Meir, Rabbi Meir is the Tan who says Dina D'Garmi, i.e. Mechitza Kerem. How did the Gemara know that Mechitza Kerem Shifritza is actually an example of Dina D'Garmi? Let it be Chayav for another reason. The Chiyav Achrayas on the Balak Kerem who doesn't fix the fence should be for a totally different reason. Heichi Shamina Mehaimas Nisa Dina D'Garmi. Hamamona Hu Da'azik. Comes the Ramban from left field and says, let you be chayav for a different reason. What's the different reason? Moment of mazik. Hashem mishpatim. Torah says, not only if I take a sledgehammer and smash your car, that's other mazik, but there's another kind of mazik as well. I'm sleeping, and my animal is spatsiering around and goes ahead. Gores your animal, or my animal goes ahead, and it eats up your crops. That's called Mamun Shehizik, Shor Shehizik. The Torah says the Parashat Mishpatim, I'm Chayav. I'm chayiv my animal gores your animal, I'm chayiv my animal eats your property, I'm chayiv my animal tramples on your field and ruins your crops. Sure, Hamazik is chayiv the first mission of a common psukim, explicit psukim in Parshas Mishpatim. The Mishnah tells us in the fifth paragraph of Bava Kama, although the Torah speaks about oxen, it's not dafka an ox. If it's a dog, my dog runs out and destroys your property, I have to pay. My money is it. It doesn't make the slightest bit of difference whether it's a shore, whether it's a kelev, or catch this one, says the Ramban. Hamamonu da azik, shagafonim shalom, heim shaholchim is amitu vas shachaveh rosinosa. What's the difference whether it's an ox, a dog, or my grapevines? It's all the same thing. I own the vines. So my vine, my kerem, my property, my mamon is going out, traveling, and being mazik. The other way, the vines grow. They just roll around and move around. It goes underneath and all of a sudden, boom, bangs into your tefua, and it's mazik your tefua. So he asked the Ramban, why is the Gemara Baba Kama Dafkuf pippling with, is this an other mazik? Is this grom? Is it garmit? You get the wrong sugya. It's mamina shehizik. Mamonish is not garmit. Garmi and grum mean I'm the mazik, but I'm doing it indirectly. But when my mamon is being mazik very directly, ein lecha shor shehizik gadol mizeh. So he asks the Ramban, why don't we say mamonu da azik shagfan shalay? I own the grapes. Shahochir is arvim tvasa shachavei rabbi yisrael asa, and they are traveling. They're going into your field, destroying halachically, causing damage by making your tvua kiliyak kerem. And it's my responsibility to put up the fence. And again, the Ramban is jumping a little bit ahead. Why is it my responsibility, not yours? We'll have to hold on for that. But Tachlis, if it's my responsibility to put up the fence, let's skip down to the end of the next line for a second. What's the difference between if I own an ox and I know my ox likes to walk around at night and I know it likes to find its way to your field and eat up your crops? The halacha says I have to put a fence. So just as I'm mechuyav, you have to put up a fence to prevent my axe from damaging, why aren't I similarly mechuyav to put up a fence to protect, to prevent my grapevines from damaging as well? That's the Ramban's cash. Why is the Gemara pilpling and spending time on garmi of other mamazik? Typically, it's obvious. It shows my money. That's the Ramban's cash. So before we get anywhere near the terror to the Ramban's cash needs a little bit of fine tuning. The Ramban was almost a little bit vague in presenting the question by saying, it's like a shor shehizik. So I'm going to challenge the Ramban. Shor shehizik can damage in multiple ways. There are actually three different ways for an axe to cause damage. The Mishnah, the very beginning of a Kama, citing the Psukim of Parshas Mishpatim, highlights that there are three different ways, with its own, each form its own set of halachas, as to how a shor damages. A shor can damage what we call keren. Keren means goring. My shore goes crazy, it goes nuts, it gores you, it gores your animal, etc. That's keren shehizik. Then there's a little bit of a calmer way called chain. My animal walks out, walks into your field and starts eating up your carrots. That's chain shehizik. And then there's regular shehizik. My animal walks out, tramples on your field, ruins all your crops by walking, I'm eating them, by walking on them. It's called the regular shehizik. They're actually psukim in Parshas Mishpatim for each one of the three. The first couple of blot in the Masechet Bava Kama. Each one of these mazikin of a shor are a separate category called av hamazik. When the Ramban posed his question, let the grapes, let the vines be a shor shehizik, which one did the Ramban have in mind? Or maybe it doesn't matter which one the Ramban had in mind. Maybe we couldn't care less when it's Karen, Shane, Rochaib anyway, what's the difference? So we're going to seal from Etzeshem on Friday. What's the difference? All the difference of the world. We're gonna have to force ourselves to define precisely what the Ramban's question is. So again, we're nowhere near the Ramban's terrace. The Ramban's terrace is gonna stop, open up our eyes about Garmi and sort of the things, just to understand it's worth an entire share just to chop what the Ramban was asking. Hopefully that's shipping Friday. We'll get a little bit more of a calm information in our back pocket to rethink what the Ramban's question really is. So we're all accepted tonight. The couple came. Good game.